Hey, it's Melissa from Melissa in the Morning on WICC 600. And thanks for checking out the podcast right here. If you want, you can always subscribe, share, and like it. Hope to see you guys soon. Thanks.
Good morning, Senator Blumenthal. My goodness, this has been a week. How are you?
I'm well, Melissa. I hope you are, too.
I am.
A lot of us are sort of sleep deprived.
Yes.
After a few days of late nights and early morning.
Good Lord. You are not kidding about that. And you had quite the announcement yesterday that we have in our newscast this morning. You are looking to seek another term in the Senate for 2022.
I'll be announcing probably sometime in the near future. I just expect to and plan to be on the ballot again. No surprise to anyone. They've seen me all around the state, as I have been for quite a few years, and I look to continue to fight for the people of Connecticut.
And Senator Blumenthal, this is absolutely in no way, shape, or form disrespect at all. I'm just asking because I know that this is what Joe Biden has gotten slack for, even the president has gotten slack for, other people in the Supreme Court. You know that news outlets are, of course, pointing out that if you were to win your reelection in 2022, that you would be in the mid to upper 70s, which is perfectly fine. But because it's a longer term than maybe like some of our state representatives, it would bring you into your 80s. And my question to you is, what do you think, you know, like the public is going to say in regards to your age, where you're at, and continuing on to represent Connecticut?
If there were any question about my ability to conduct my duties with the same kind of energy and verve and dedication to working for the people of Connecticut, I wouldn't be a candidate. But I think the public will see that I am as energetic and strong as ever.
Senator Blumenthal, I wanted to talk honestly about the voting process. The big reason I wanted to talk about it is because, well, look at the election, I guess. You know, not even just the presidential election, but we had a lot of our local races paused here in Connecticut. They were delayed. For example, Fairfield, District 28, that was delayed for almost a full 12 hours after the polls closed because they were waiting on absentee ballots. So first and foremost, looking at Connecticut, it sounds like overall our system worked. We did have some problems here and there with machines, but overall it worked. Would you say that even without COVID in the mix, that you could see Connecticut continuing with offering absentee ballots beyond like college students or people in the military, but for everyday people to have that option?
That option really should be offered because it reduces the glitches at the polls, the lines that have been somewhat dangerous during the pandemic, but also the ease and convenience, the cost is lower. And I think that people in Connecticut are ready to follow other states. There are 10 to 20 of them that use this kind of early voting, and I think Connecticut ought to do it as well. The other states that follow it have found that it's very productive, cost-effective, it saves money, and it eliminates the glitches that sometimes have occurred in Connecticut's history. So I think that the best proof that it works is what happened during this past election. I just want to give a shout out to all those poll workers and registrars and everybody who made it relatively glitch-free and smooth.
Now, what about early polling places? And the reason I ask that, Senator, is because, you know, we do have people for, I think, very good reason. They don't want to do absentee balloting. I have to be honest, when I was in line for the polls, there were, you know, even though specifically absentee balloting for this year was so that an older population could stay home and vote from home, I can't tell you how many people I saw in their 50s, 60s driving up and bringing their elderly parents out to vote because they want to do that. They've been doing that for decades. They want to be at the polls. And I think that they have the right to do that. So my question to you is, do you feel like the voting process has become a little archaic? I mean, because at this point, you have significantly more people voting than we saw when voting first came into play decades ago. So wouldn't it make sense to give the same option that we are with absentee ballots, to give the same option of early polling, say a week or two, I'd even say a month beforehand, where people can get to the polls other than just on November 3rd?
That's a really good point, Melissa. First of all, I am one of those voters who loves to actually physically go to the polls, mm-hmm. even though sometimes in local elections I'm down in the Capitol, so I have to vote by mail. I'm simply not here. But I think that affording people that option is really potentially a very good avenue because it eliminates the lines on election day, but it also gives those voters an easier way to do it mm-hmm. through early voting. And you could see that there were lines in Georgia and some of the other states where physical early voting occurred. It's not a panacea or a magic bullet to solve all the problems, but let's keep in mind our goals, which are reliable, safe, and cost-effective methods. You want every vote to count. You want it to be fraud-free. You want it to be easy for the voter to do, fewer lines if possible, and no threat to safety. And you want it to be as inexpensive as feasible. We're not going to be able to bring a voting machine to people's homes.
Right.
So I think that early voting makes a lot of sense, physical voting as well as mail-in voting.
Okay. Talking to Senator Richard Blumenthal this morning, and it is election week coverage. I'm calling it election week because, Senator, I can't remember the last time we've gone this long without knowing who the next president is going to be. So it's been quite a whirlwind. My question before I let you go, Senator, you know, state to state, here's the challenge. I've had so many callers asking this question. Well, why are we still waiting on this state, Pennsylvania, for example? Why are we still waiting on them? You know, Connecticut did it right. That's what I keep hearing. Connecticut did it right. My question to you is, because, of course, it comes down to the state. What's interesting is with federal elections, we actually get to make the calls on how we're going to do the voting, how we're going to take absentee ballots, so on and so forth. So do you think with the amount of delay that we're dealing with right now for the presidential election, do you think that there's going to be down the line more uniformity, especially if we're anticipating absentee balloting staying? I just think this system is not exactly working. Like, I understand, you know, like California, the West Coast, we expect to get those votes in late because of the time change. But because states had different rules for, you know, timestamps and dates and what time you could get it in and so on and so forth, I think that's where the delay is coming from. And I'm wondering if this is really the best way of doing it, even though I know it's up to the states to make that call. Does that make sense?
Makes a lot of sense, Melissa. And here's the answer. I'm going to be a little bit simplistic in the interest of time. Those various states, whether Pennsylvania, Georgia, Nevada, Arizona, North Carolina, Wisconsin, Minnesota, took longer because the rules were different. Sometimes, by the way, the rules were set by Republican legislatures, sometimes by others, like in Pennsylvania, the Supreme Court of the state changed its rules. But I think your point is really well taken, that we need some uniformity and some standard across the nation. And a lot of this confusion would be eliminated if you simply had the popular vote, that is, the vote across the country, determine who is the next president instead of the so-called electoral college. That's why we're focusing state by state, because each of the states
right.
sends delegates to the electoral college. So I've been an advocate of abolishing the Electoral College, let the people decide, let the popular vote determine who the next president is. Connecticut has joined a pact that would commit our state legislature to allocate our delegates according to the popular vote. If enough states join that pact, the state rules will be that delegates will be committed to vote for what the majority of the American people, the whole American people, decide. And then a lot of this individual state-by-state focus would be reduced or more likely completely eliminated. And I think that's the fairest, most democratic way to go.
Senator Richard Blumenthal, thank you so much for coming on this morning. We'll talk again next week.
Wonderful, Miss. Thanks for having me as always.
I always say on the air that real news sources will do corrections if they've done wrong. And I am not perfect. I certainly have had my mishaps, but I have no problem admitting when I'm wrong. So, George Cabrera, I am so sorry. I have been referring to you as Jorge. and I apologize because that's how your name is spelled, and I apologize. But George Cabrera, thank you so much for coming on the air this morning. I appreciate it. How are you?
I'm well. Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Thank you for being here. Well, first and foremost, congratulations to you. That was quite the upset that we saw for the 17th district. How are you feeling this morning?
I feel great. Thank you so much. It was a fantastic campaign. I had an incredible team and an incredible amount of energy and support, and we're very pleased with the results, and we're looking forward to getting to work.
Mm-hmm. Now, what's interesting about this race is that you and George Logan, you guys have matched up before. In 2018, it was actually very, very slim that George Logan pulled ahead. I think it was only by like 90 votes after a recount and was able to serve this last term. And now in this round, you won over, I think it said over 900 votes ahead of him. So it's interesting. You know, how are you feeling going into this matchup again?
We felt good. You know, it was a 77-vote margin in 2018. You know, we never stopped working the issues that people cared about in the district, whether it was health care or making sure that they had access to good-paying jobs or helping support small businesses in the middle of COVID. We just kept talking to the voters. We stayed on the ground, connecting with folks, and we just felt, you know, we were in a much stronger position this time, and the voters agreed with my platform and my values and decided to send me to the state house. So we're very happy about that.
I mean, I give you a lot of credit, Mr. Cabrera, because, you know, we saw other races in the state of Connecticut that were very similar, where, you know, somebody who ran in 2018 went for another shot at it in 2020. And a lot of people did not find the same success that you did. What do you think kind of pulled you ahead in this race specifically?
Well, I think first, I had an amazing team, amazing campaign manager and field coordinator. And I think, you know, we were just consistent. And I was very open with the voters. We talked about my values and the work I've been doing to help people get into the middle class. You know, the reality is that people know that for many, too many times, the rules have changed for them. I met people who are working hard every single day, doing all the right things, and are just not getting ahead. And that's really what really resonated with folks. And I understand that I'm a first-generation college graduate, and I saw my parents fight really hard and sacrifice to give me opportunities. And I meet people in this district and throughout Connecticut who are doing the same exact things my parents are doing, but just not seeing that rainbow at the end of their path. And that's what we spoke about, and those are the things we want to work on, whether it's healthcare reform or good-paying jobs or helping public education be fully funded. And people understood that, and they got it.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I love that. I love that, you know, that parallel of what you found generation to generation. Talking to George Cabrera this morning, a huge victory last night for him for the 17th Senate District. Now, again, that covers, Ansonia, Beacon Falls, Naugatuck, Hamden, that area. So a lot of our listeners are right there listening this morning to you, Mr. Cabrera. And my question to you before we let you go is, what is going to be your focus for your term? What do you find is going to be the thing that you're bringing to the table and that you're going to be fighting for?
My overarching focus is going to be, you know, what can we do in the legislature to make people's lives a little easier and to make sure that their hard work pays off? And then, you know, more specifically, I'm looking seriously at healthcare reform. People need to know that they're able to afford healthcare, and I think that's a really important issue. And then the core of the things we're going to be focusing on at IAM is making sure people get through this pandemic as unscathed as possible. And that's going to mean giving support to small businesses, making sure frontline workers are protected. And that's going to be a big focus of mine.
George Cabrera this morning, the winner of the District 17 Senate race. We are so happy that we could have you on this morning. I would love to have you come back on the air when things sort of settle down and everybody's kind of in their places and everything. Would love to have you on the air more often would be great.
Anytime. I appreciate taking the time to talk to me.
Thank you. We appreciate it. It's no secret. We are rolling into the winter season.
And I think this is a great topic because, especially with the pandemic, a lot of you are still not even comfortable going to the gym to get a workout. And I think that, especially with the colder season coming, even more than before, people are making home gyms. But you want to make sure that you're not getting duped while you're doing that. Of course, Luke Fry of the Better Business Bureau is here, and he's got some great tips for you this morning. Luke, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing fine, thank you. So first of all, how do you even start by choosing and purchasing the right home gym equipment?
Sure. So there's a lot of things you have to keep in mind. And I'm sure now, as you were saying, it's about to get cold. I think a lot of people are kind of looking for some stress relief, possibly, too, after this week.
Yes.
So a lot of people could be going online and just looking to see what they can get for a home gym. There's a lot of popular items out there, bikes and other types of equipment. But how do you know really what you need or what you want? And if you are trying to save a couple dollars and not go for that top, you know, popular item, you also don't want to get scammed either or end up getting a piece of equipment you don't like.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess first off, figure out what fitness goals you kind of have. You know, are you a cardio person? Do you want to do weights? Is it about toning? Is it about losing, you know, overall weight? And kind of look into what piece of equipment will help you obtain that. So you really don't want to order a piece of equipment that kind of has that get fit quick slogan or, you know, I've seen commercials for pieces of equipment. And it's like, all you have to do is use this simple product for 20 minutes every day and you're going to have a six pack of abs in a month. And it's like a personal on a couch, like moving their ankles. And it's like, okay, well, how is that actually going to get me abs?
I have actually, I have purchased something like that. It was like a, it looked like almost like a surfboard or something. And all you do is
yes.
swivel on it. And I thought, oh my gosh, I'm going to be like a size two. And for some reason, I'm still not a size two. So yeah, you're right. You're right. Yeah. Those jarring notices like that, I've got to think are kind of red flags.
Yeah, so be careful, again, about what the actual piece of equipment does or any of those crazy guarantees of, again, having abs in, you know, 20 days. It's not going to happen regardless probably what piece of equipment you buy, but then also talking about a budget too. So how much can you spend? How much do you want to spend? A lot of people get hooked into a lot of popular pieces of equipment, a lot of popular bikes out there right now, and they are actually on great payment plans. However, you do have to be approved to be on those payment plans. So if you are looking into a piece of equipment and you want to get on a plan, you do have to be pre-approved. So I would call just so that you know, or I guess apply online. And then also, is there any additional costs? So there usually are, and it's usually a subscription to a service where you can see classes and be a part of virtual classes on that machine as well. So it's not only that one rental payment, or I guess it's a payment to own that piece of equipment, you also have that subscription cost as well. And it could be under, you know, a cost you currently have at your gym. So evaluate that. You know, how much are you paying in a year to go to your current gym versus how much would you pay using some other piece of equipment you plan on adding in your home?
Luke Fry of the Better Business Bureau is here. We're talking about kind of creating a home gym. As we're heading into the winter months, a lot of you very nervous to even go back to the gym since the pandemic for understandable reasons. Now, Luke, especially with the bigger pieces of equipment, it's one thing to buy little things here, maybe weights, maybe resistance bands, you know, drop a few bucks here, drop $100 there. But when you're talking about, you know, a bike or an elliptical and you're looking at $2,500, $5,000, you know, that's really expensive equipment. And a lot of times people will go to like a Craigslist or they'll go somewhere or like a Facebook Black Market or something, and they will go to find deals on this equipment. Now, I know in here there is a recommendation from the BBB to, if possible, test equipment before you buy, but that's not always an option. So would you recommend people avoiding maybe those deals that they find online and paying the extra money to know you're getting the value of what you want in your equipment?
So that's actually a great tip. And, you know, purchasing any type of product online, Facebook Marketplace, things like that, you do have to be careful. And if it is a big ticket item, like a piece of exercise equipment, you really have to be, I guess, careful about what you are buying. So,
like, is it weird to ask that person if you can come check it out? Like, is that a weird request to ask somebody on Facebook Marketplace, hey, can I come to your house and, like, actually get on the elliptical to make sure it works correctly?
I don't think it is.
Okay.
However, if it is a person who has bad intentions, they're going to have an excuse as to why you can't. Oh, well, I don't, you know, want people coming in my home because of COVID and yada, yada, yada. Or, you know, ask them to put it out in their garage and say, hey, can I come try it? I mean, if you're about to drop, you know, $1,000, even $800, $500 for a piece of equipment, I would want to go try it out if you could, or at least go see it. Make sure it works and ask them questions. Hey, are there any other, you know, subscriptions I have to buy in order to use this piece of equipment? Is it broken? Does it work? How are you going to pick it up and all of those things? And then also being aware of how they're asking you to pay. Again, if they are asking you to pay using these prepaid gift cards, not ever a good sign. I would say, hands down, the best way to pay for a product on sites like Facebook Marketplace is cash. Tell them you will have cash. And really, if you get the item you think you are getting, it's all good and fair. If you pay cash, they have your payment. And on the flip side, too, if you have a piece of equipment you want to sell on Marketplace, I would only accept cash, especially for those large purchases of, I would say, even over $100. Make sure you are getting cash at that point of sale.
Makes a lot of sense. How to choose and purchase home gym equipment. If you want to learn more about this, you can head to BBB.org. You can find more information there. Luke Fry of the Better Business Bureau, always a pleasure to have you on. Thank you for these tips and happy workouts.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thank you. You too.